1490. Leonardo da Vinci tekent de Vitruviusman en maakt daarmee de mens tot maat der dingen. Bijna 5 eeuwen later bedenkt Alan Turing een experiment waarmee hij zich afvraagt of machines aan deze menselijke maat en vooral intelligentie kunnen voldoen. Het startschot voor een technologische revolutie.
In de podcastserie AI for Life gaan we in gesprek met wetenschappers, gebruikers en ondernemers. Op de schouders van Leonardo en Alan gaan we op zoek naar de impact van AI op ons leven. Kortom, AI for Life.
Welkom in our podcast in the series AI for Life. Our goal with this podcast series is to show the diverse range of AI research that is done in Nijmegen together with companies, including the translation of science to impact through companies. After all, impact is research multiplied by entrepreneurship. The topic of this podcast of today is the use of AI in electrical grids to improve the efficiency, sustainability and reliability of energy grids. Radboud University, together with Aliander, work together in the EKI lab to combine the state-of-art research with a practical application of this new knowledge for the electrical grid. And the focus in this case is on the medium and low voltage nets in the Netherlands. My name is Martijn Kriens. I'm program manager of Brisker, and we help bring science to impact. My guests in this podcast are Julia Shapovalova. Am I pronouncing that correctly? From the Radboud University, and Jaco Heres and Manuel Dakesian from Aliander, both of you. Maybe first a round of introduction. Julia, can you introduce yourself shortly?
Yes, sure. So I'm Julia Shapovalova, and I'm an assistant professor at the Institute for Computing and Information Sciences at Radboud University. I work on probabilistic machine learning for complex data, and I'm based in the data science group. Maybe break down very quickly my specialization. So when I talk of complex data, I mean the data which have quite complex dependencies, for example, such as certain dependencies over time. And when I talk of probabilistic machine learning, I mean machine learning methods and AI methods which are able not only provide predictions, but also quantify uncertainty related to these predictions.
Yeah, okay, clear. And then Jaco, can you introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you. My name is Jaco Heers. I am a data scientist working at Aliander. I'm working both in a team called Insights in the Grid Loads, and I'm also active in the AI for Energy Grids EKI lab, which was mentioned. My personal focus is to try to estimate or predict the loads on our grids, the current loads on our grids, on places where you don't measure, and try to estimate it as good as possible, and to forecast them for several years ahead as good as possible, so that we can make better use of the grids and plan exchanges better, etc.
Yeah, and maybe a short introduction of Aliander.
So Aliander is a distribution grid company. So we distribute all the electricity and the gas in roughly 1/3 of the Netherlands. So we get it, usually we connect to transport grid operators like TenneT and the GasUnie, which transport gas and electricity over large distances and distribute it to all the houses, smaller businesses, and some of the larger businesses, in roughly 1/3 of the Netherlands, including Nijmegen.
Okay, very good. And Manuel?
Hello, I'm Manuel Dakesian, originally from Lebanon. I've studied mechanical engineering back in Lebanon, and I moved to the Netherlands around 4 years ago now, studied sustainable energy in TU Delft. And after my studies, I directly started working at Aliander in the Department of System Operations. Systems Operation is also a relatively new department within Aliander. We have been working for the past 3 years, I'd say, on developing smart products within the grid to be able to increase the flexibility in the grid and also make use of all the free space to add clients into grid without causing any issues, safety issues to the grid.
Clear. Yeah, that's a question I have later on the podcast, is that one of the things I always believe in, there's safety in redundancy, and it sounded in the previous conversation we had, is that we are really pushing the network more and more. But it's something that we will talk about a little bit later. Jaco, maybe as a start, can you explain in what ways Alliander is using AI to improve the electricity grid in the Netherlands?
Yeah, as most people might have heard or read, we have quite a challenge in delivering all the capacity that's needed for all the wind farms, solar generation, electric vehicle heat pumps, and also new companies like the distribution, the data centers, battery operators. And we believe that AI can help us in two ways in solving this. One is by making better use of the current grids and the future grids, where, for instance, make it possible to offer these smart projects that Madhu was talking about. And another way is by boosting the productivity of our engineers and technicians, which are rather scarce. We don't, we cannot just hire 10 times as many people to speed up the layout of new grids that much. We're trying to do so, but cannot do it by that much. But with AI, we can optimize boring or repetitive work so that they can do more work in the same amount of time.
Yeah, and it's not about the robotization, but more about better planning and things like that, I can imagine.
Yeah, also robotization, but that's a bit more challenging. But doing the manual work is quite hard. But more like cleaning data, inspections, analyzing photos, and indeed planning, planning the future grid as good as possible, gathering all data or doing calculations on all kinds of scenarios and what is the effect on the grid, things like that.
Yeah. Okay. And maybe, Julia, maybe you can say something about the kind of research that you're doing in relation to the electricity grid.
Yes, of course. So we have currently one project with a PhD candidate who is support of AI for Energy Grids Lab, a joint lab with Alliander and multiple other Dutch universities, including Radboud. And in this specific project, so the PhD candidate, Charlotte Cambier Manota, she works on reliability assessment of electricity grids. So essentially, when I talk of reliability assessment, what I mean is that, say, one component in a grid fails, is there going to be a system-wide outage? Or does electricity still get everywhere where it should? And using AI and machine learning, and specifically for those who are interested in the methods graph neural networks, we are trying to make very efficient, fast predictions of whether a grid satisfies, a current grid structure satisfies this property, this reliability property. So this can be important for various scenarios, right? So for example, and maybe Manuel can contribute there a bit later, if a customer is connected to the grid, does the grid still satisfy this reliability? So if a new customer is connected, is the new grid structure still reliable? And if one component in the grid fails, that the energy still gets everywhere. So at the moment, we are looking at the whole grid structure, but there are several directions essentially where we want to go from here. One of these directions would be not identifying a whole system or not classifying the whole system, whether it's reliable or not, but also identifying specific spots in the grid which are reliable or not. because then the domain experts from Eleander can actually perform actions to hopefully address possible issues. So say we find part of the grid which is not reliable, perhaps something can be done about it. But also, as I mentioned, part of our group's interest is uncertainty quantification in machine learning and AI. And in particular, when we say that a grid is reliable or not, how certain we are in this prediction. And providing this is not always very trivial for such a complex system.
And I suppose we are talking about, in this case, safety risks as a sort of an early warning, because, of course, if the grid breaks down, it's extremely costly, I always understand. So it's really about the total prevention of it breaking down. Can you say something about that, Manuel, and the importance of that?
Yes, of course. Within system operations, as we mentioned, of course, safety is utmost important. So to help us with that, what AI helps us to do is to combine so much data from different sources, such as weather data, irradiance, spot market prices, historical measurements, and combine all that data to be able to predict the load in the short term and in the long term in different locations throughout the entire grid. So if you look into the forecasts of the long term, you will be able to see where the bottlenecks in the grid are in the near future, in the long term future, and then you would be able to treat those issues early on, prioritize maintenance there, prioritize the expansion of the grid in those areas. Whereas in the short term, we're able to predict congestion on a daily basis. For the next 48 hours, for example, we'd be able to know where and which locations within the grid would have congestion. And since we know where there is congestion, we also have clients which have offered themselves to us within, of course, signed contracts to provide flexibility for the grid. So whenever we detect an issue within the grid, we will be able to contact this client if he is near to that location and ask him, please increase or reduce your load to provide safety for the grid to mitigate the issue in that sense. So with forecasts, we are able to utilize our clients to also keep the grid safe in an essence.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we talked about in the interview we had beforehand. So where you said from the net use has went from 70% to sometimes 120%, when you know that when the cable is going to be taken out in the next 1 or 2 years. One of the things I would, in a way, I suppose, we are going in the grid from a sort of a stable equilibrium, difficult word, where you know with 70%, you're never going to run into troubles, to a sort of a dynamic equilibrium. Is that right? So we really need to be continuing on attention to take care that the grid stays valid.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And also with including a lot of renewable energy resources into the grid, it has become so unpredictable. And it makes it much harder to know where the load is going to be, at what time, where the congestion is going to be in each location. So you have to always act in a dynamic way and be ready to provide solutions at any time in any location where you need to.
Yeah, interesting. From what I understood is you are all using large language models at this moment to do part of the forecasting, from what I understood in the previous conversation. And of course, everybody knows ChatGPT. But in what way are large language models used in this?
So we're not using large language models to predict the electricity. Not yet, at least. Maybe they become also suitable for that. But the attempts that are currently being made to implicate using large language models is, of course, with helping programming. That's very useful. If you have to rewrite your program in another programming language, for instance. And also, there are some, there's a pilot for answering questions from building companies to do some work for us and have some questions about the certain requirements for a certain project. It takes a lot of time, and sometimes these answers are just in documents, and a large language model can answer these. And there's also attempts being made to use a large language model as a way to communicate to more complicated electrical technical models, so that people don't have to learn all the details of this electrical technical model, just type in the question they have. Does this customer fit on this grid? And that in the back end, the calculation is done by a real electrical technical model. But you don't have to understand everything. Or build a user interface specifically for a specific use case, but use a large language model as an interface for more complicated physical models.
Okay, but not in these types of problems that you're working on in relation to this, I understand.
They're not yet in production, but the things that Manuel talked about, they are already in use.
Okay. One of the other things that was mentioned, measuring the load where there's no monitoring available in the network. And what kind of technology we are talking about then?
Yeah, so maybe, it's good to know we think there's a lot of space available in the grid because, in the past we said we were blind but happy. We didn't put any measurements because, usually those are also not that difficult. That the current also always, the power flow was always from large energy plants towards customers, so one direction. But now it's become more complicated, so it was also useful to get insights in what's happening deeper in the grid. We don't have that many measurements there. We start installing them, but it also takes time and a lot of effort. But we do have a lot of information about what customers are there and what type of loads do they have. Some the larger customers, they have direct measurements that can be used. They're already used for the billing purposes, but can also be used for more technical calculations. And we also have more and more smart meter data that used to be, we need to use it very carefully because it's privacy sensitive. But for instance, use the voltage of these smart meter data. That's not that privacy sensitive because it's more a property of the network and not of the customer. That tells us a lot about what's happening deeper in the grid. Or we can use smart meter data in a sort of aggregated way. So we sum up all smart meters that are behind a single transformer house to get an idea what's happening there. And we don't need the individual data of all the customers. We get an aggregated result which gives us information on what's happening there.
And in what way is that information then used to steer the network to...
It often turns out that in the past, because we didn't know that much and we wanted to be sure that everything was safe and that there were no outages, we were very conservative. So if you know more, it usually turns out that there's way more space in the grid than we thought with these conservative assumptions. So we can accept that the loads become higher than previously. So without installing any new equipment, we can have more room for new customers or new loads on the grid.
No.
And it's also needed for these smart products. So there are sometimes customers offering flexibility, or there are now new contract forms where customers have a certain capacity that varies over time. But in order to calculate this, you need to know what is the capacity over time. Previously, we only did calculations on maximum loads occurred once a year. Now you need more detailed information to decide whether you need this flexibility at a certain moment and whether you can offer a certain contract with a varying capacity.
Yeah, and maybe a question for Julia. If you look at the kind of knowledge that you are bringing from the university in AI, what are the most important elements that improve these kind of processes?
Yeah, so I will contribute a little bit of both points of Manuel and Jaco. So these are two different points, right? So with Manuel, we talked a little bit about how the grid became very dynamic, and there is now more uncertainty because different energy sources. And basically that you need to make decisions quite fast these days, especially about things like reliability of the grid. And maybe to give the listeners a bit of tangible idea of what kind of improvements we can provide with AI. So in particular for reliability assessment, we are currently able to make predictions in 2 seconds. So meaning that if we have a current state of the grid with some information about different cables and substations and things like that, then in 2 seconds we can tell if the grid is reliable or not. In comparison, the more traditional approaches take about 40 minutes, which means that this type of evaluations can pile up quite quickly. And if you want to make decisions in fast environment, then this efficiency definitely helps. So that's where we are able to exploit the efficiency of the AI algorithms in providing the decision-making support.
And that's the kind of information that Manuel then is using to make his decisions on contacting who?
From what I know, this is not yet in deployment, right? So okay. We recently submitted a paper on this.
He's looking eager to use it.
And, of course.
And there is definitely a certain cycle from initial research idea to a successful research implementation to the final deployment in the production, right? So we definitely hope that it will get there, but it's not quite there yet. And with respect to some things that Jaco mentioned, right? So now Alejandro is getting... I think it was already for quite a while a data-driven company, right? So we've had master students together for a while, and there was never an issue that there is too little data. So Alejandro always had quite rich data sets to be analyzed. But now this data are collected even more and more with certain sensors. But it's important to know that the measurements are not always perfect, right? So they can be noisy. They can be corrupted by some noise. Maybe sensors are not performing very well. Maybe they were overheated, or maybe they're not very well calibrated, right? It's a huge system, so it's hard to make perfect measurements all the time. And from that perspective, we can provide, for example, another PhD candidate, Roel Bouwman. He worked on outlier detection in certain data types from Alejandro. And I think Jaco was quite closely involved in Storm project. That's the name of this project as well. So he probably can tell a little bit more about it. But essentially the idea that some of the measurements may be a little bit off, and we want to detect when they are off and where they are off. And that's where some of the machine learning methods can also provide quite advantageous solutions. Yeah. So, Jaco, yeah. Do you want to say a few words about the Storm?
Yeah, so that's an example, another example where we, not that much about making more efficient use of the grid, but more on optimizing manual work, because previously, this filtering was also done because otherwise, you cannot do your analysis. But when there's bad data in your measurements, but that needed to be done by hand, and it took like 6 weeks for several people per year to do this, and it could only be done once a year, and not live, for instance. And with this Storm algorithm that's already implemented, doesn't filter out all of the errors, but at least the amount of manual work is decreased by like 2/3. And the data that's left over, because there's more time to focus on less problems, the data quality is also getting better, which then means that the predictions are better, which then uses to that has an effect, a positive effect on making more effective use on the grid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe to add to this as well, we have, for example, as they mentioned, we have a lot of data, of course. We have some sensors, for example, called smart cable guard sensors. We have thousands of these within the grid, within cables. And these sensors are able to detect partial discharge, which is like a localized dielectric breakdown. So whenever these breakdowns happen, and then a long time passes over them, or they become more intense over time. So that could lead to damages within the cables. And for example, you would have faults within the cable and blackouts within areas of the grid. So AI always helps us to go through this huge amount of data. You can imagine thousands of sensors within the grid recording measurements every minute. That is a huge amount of data. We use AI to filter through this data to focus on the most urgent matters and have, of course, specialized people looking at them and deciding, okay, in this part of grid, this is not noise actually. This was a partial discharge. We should remove this part of the cable to avoid any fault in the future, in the nearby future. And hence, this increases our efforts to make the grid safe. And
So the AI is there on the one hand for the amount of data, but also to determine what are the outliers that you should take out of the set, because it would lead to the wrong conclusion, from what I understand.
Exactly. And it also learns from itself throughout the time. So it gets better and better every time with also the decisions that you input. It also learns from its mistakes. That's what I'm seeing within the usage of the AI.
Yeah. Okay, clear. We're sort of getting to the end of the podcast. There's always one question I always ask of all the people that we interview in this. And I would like to for you to make a prediction, each of you. And I always say, when somebody says something is 30 years off, we really haven't got a clue. When we say 3 years, it's usually already pretty clear what in 3 years the technology is going to be. But in 10 years, it means that the seeds needs to be there, but there are still a lot of choices to be made on how the technology is going to be used. And if you look at for the forecast for 10 years, what role do you think will AI play in the electricity grid? Who wants to be first to answer that question? Not all at the same time, well.
This different time horizons is maybe a bit more interesting, because we hope that at some points we have finalized the energy transition, and then maybe we can install a bit more cables and transformers, and then we are back in the old situation. So maybe within 10 years we are about on the decision point, like, do we still need this grid where it's fully integrated with AI and we cannot handle the grid and operate the grid without it, because otherwise the limits would be really the borders would be mission crossed. Would we want to keep this, or do we want to install some extra cables and transformers to go back to the old-fashioned way of operating grids?
But from what I understand from you, you see this really as a sort of a transitioning period, and in the end we will have plenty of cables to create redundancy again?
Well, that might be over like 40 years, but in 10 years that's not the case, then we're still very busy. In 10 years, I suspect that AI will really be very important. Otherwise, you cannot operate the grid, but over 10 years, we have to start thinking about this. Do we accept the disadvantages of maybe having a little, have a quite complicated grid structure? Or do we want to put some extra effort in going to the old situation.
Okay, clear. Julia?
I think, so my prediction is that AI will provide new opportunities over time. So we are using certain AI technologies at the moment for certain goals, but perhaps in 10 or 40 years time, there would be new AI technologies which could provide new opportunities. So I see it really more as an integrated systems together, perhaps. And right now we can provide some things like reliability assessments, so that's what I mentioned, but also maybe provide consumers with their consumption awareness and analysis of their private data of how they consume energy and how they can be more efficient. But also there are new technologies with respect to energy storage and with the new renewable systems. So for example, if we use windmills or solar panels, these are the kind of technologies which do not provide stable energy sources. So it again means that we should be able to store this energy efficiently. And I think in those type of things, AI will still be providing new and new opportunities. So perhaps more accurate weather predictions, meaning that we are able to predict when we are actually going to be getting energy from wind or sun and things like that. So I think essentially we are here with AI systems and hopefully they will keep helping us. Hopefully we also expand the energy grid so that this necessity of using AI technology is not that crucial. But the technologies always will be there to help the efficiency of the system.
Okay, and Manuel, the last one is for you.
Yes, now that I've had time to think about it. So what I believe is it's always going to be intertwined between our personal efforts and the technology of the AI, because we will always have to input new data, new training to the models, because as we see the energy transition, at least in the energy transition, it's always changing. We were always thinking, okay, we're going to add so many solar panels, so many wind turbines into the grid. But now we're thinking, okay, storage is needed in the grid as well. And I believe this is an ever-continuing process of going forward, evolving, training the models in different ways. I believe in the future, within 5 years or whatever, and up in the foreseen future, we will be able, with AI, to detect issues, to find solutions, appropriate solutions, maybe even changing parts of the grid to other substations to reduce the congestion on one part of the grid, connect it to another place which is less congested. I think it will be a great tool for us to assist us in our, I don't know, keeping the grid safe, basically.
Yeah. And does that mean also that, so in the future, of course, the more important this becomes, and the faster the decisions need to be taken. Will the grid in the end be completely automated and no human interaction in deciding in who's going to produce and use anymore there?
I always think that there's going to be need for scientists, researchers to do their part, to add, to contribute to the ever-changing world of energy transition, to be honest. I think none of us know what's going to look like in 10 years, in 20 years, and we are sure it's going to change. You provided a smarter look into cities where the cities generate their own electricity and use it, but it also might be impossible or might be possible. No one knows. And I think in order to be able to predict that easier, or you always need the input of great brilliant minds, scientists to contribute to that.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. Okay, thank you all for contributing to this this podcast. Thank you also for the people listening to the podcast, AI for Life. I say thanks to our guest for today, explaining how AI is being used to enhance the efficiency, sustainability and reliability of the electrical grid. And hope to that you will listen the next time again on the AI for Life podcast. Thank you.
luisterde naar een podcast van AI for Life. Maandelijkse praktijkverhalen vanuit Health en Hightech Hotspot Nijmegen. En vanuit het regionale netwerk LifePort over hoe AI kan bijdragen aan betere kwaliteit van leven.